Hey, this is Dan Hansis alongside Chris Wessling.
Hey, Dan.
Mark Sessler and the boss, Greg Rosenthal. We're the Around the NFL podcast. Check us out three times a week as we discuss the latest NFL news as it happens. Always, of course, with a touch of mirth. Subscribe at NFL.com/podcasts, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, what is up? James Go here on the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. Great show today. One, because we're going to have great content. We're going to be talking about deep sleepers. It's my personal favorite topic in fantasy. I know for a lot of you as well. But we welcome back the franchise.
Yay!
Matt,
yay.
Francisco. Hey, man, what's up, dude?
What's up? What's up? How's it going? Glad to be back.
Your sabbatical has ended.
It has ended.
Give us one good story from the sabbatical.
Oh, one good story. I don't know. That's tough, but let me just start by saying, listen. It's my third year in the system.
Okay.
I'm in the best shape of my life. I'm ready to take my game to the next level. And, you know, all the coaches say the sky's the limit, so.
Very good.
I'm back and I'm ready to go.
Very good.
Wow. A show full
all
of tropes already.
Just,
in the morning.
I like it.
Just tossing them out.
I want you to think about the best story you had over the sabbatical and drop it in on Daily Dap.
I will.
Very good. All right. We're going to be talking about deep sleepers and something called NFC Red Zone Analysis.
Yes.
We will be getting to that when the show progresses. But remember, you can sign up today, NFL.com/fantasy. Sign up, renew your leagues, renew your teams, do all that kind of good stuff. You can do mock drafts on there right now. And if you're looking, if you're fiending for some draft content, NFL.com/draft kit. We got all the good stuff on there. Sleepers, deep sleepers, busts. What else we got on there?
Breakouts.
Right. Yep. So all kinds of good stuff on there. It's insane. A crazy amount of content. For the people who play IDP, God bless you. Marcus Grant and Alex Gillar actually broke it down. I'm shocked and appalled, and kudos to you guys. I couldn't do it. I couldn't get myself to do that. That would be tough.
It takes a mountain or whatever, known as Marcus and I, to just soldier through all those IDPs in the offseason.
Hey, look, I realize that the IDP community isn't large, but those of you out there, you are fanatical and you are loyal. So, you know, hey,
props to that.
Props to you guys.
NFL.com/draft kit. Be sure to check it out. All right, let's get to our top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife.
All right, we'll start in Baltimore. Breshad Perriman's never going to play football again. No, I kid. Look, Breshad Perriman, there was a report of a partially torn ACL. Remember, he hasn't played a single snap in the NFL yet. He reportedly was supposed to go under the knife, but I don't have it in front of me. But Marcus, I think Ian Rappaport tweeted out something late breaking here.
That he won't be done for the year. Let me get the tweet actually itself. Good news for the Ravens and wide receiver Breshad Perriman. His knee was deemed stable enough. Got a stem cell injection. Expected to be okay for 2016.
So didn't need surgery.
Oh, I think there was like minor. They just cut him open to see what it was.
A little arthroscopic surgery,
yeah.
I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's why he went with Dr. James Andrews, because it was determining whether or not he would just need the stem cell shot or full reconstruction, which would have taken him out for this year. So.
Oh, he went to James Andrews, huh?
Everybody does. Oh. Is there anybody with a better job in the country right now than Dr. James Andrews?
But you only go to James Andrews if you've heard some bad stuff. You need it triple confirmed.
Yeah.
And he usually confirms that it is bad. So not looking great for Breshad Perriman. I don't think anybody's drafting Breshad Perriman. That's fine. But it's kind of in conjunction with the second piece of news out of Baltimore that Steve Smith Sr., Triple S, says he doesn't know when he's coming back.
It was kind of an ominous interview that I think ESPN had first.
I agree.
It's true, though, too. He tore his Achilles midseason.
How old is he? 37?
37 now.
37 years old. He tore his Achilles midseason. It's an injury that takes, on the short end, it probably takes about 9 months. Yep. On the short end. At given 37 years old, I think it'd be fair to assume and probably take a full year.
Yeah,
on the Achilles.
He was just being realistic. Like he hasn't done anything yet. He was running. He's not sure. Maybe he'll get out there in training camp. Maybe later. But
right.
This is an injury too that isn't like it's not like ACLs these days where it's just like lickety split. Oh wow, it's healed. It's an injury that does sap you of a little bit of explosiveness and stuff. So we'll have to keep an eye on when he comes back. But man, with this news, I think to spin it ahead, the
right.
most attractive pass catching option from the Ravens now has become franchise's boy.
It's
Kamar
your
Aiken.
Boy.
Uh oh.
It's your boy, franchise.
Miracle.
What's up, man? What should we get excited about for Kamar Aiken?
90 receptions and 800 yards and 8 touchdowns.
That's your projection?
That's my projection.
If he gets 90 catches, bro.
He had 75 last year.
No, I'm saying if he gets 90 catches, he's going to crush your yardage projection.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah.
He will crush. I mean, if he gets 90 receptions, I think 1,100 yards.
I mean, the pace he was on from week 10 to 17 last year, obviously, I don't like doing this because it's not an exact science, but just to look, if he gets that type of volume and produces at a similar level, he was on pace for like 100 catches, like 1,000-ish yards, and like 8 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I think if, again, if he gets to that 90 number on an entire year, I think he'd be pushing 1,100.
to not jump ahead, he was one guy before all these injuries and Steve Smith, when he was coming back, was a guy I had pegged as a deep sleeper because he played pretty well down the stretch and the volume could be there. Mike Wallace, especially if Smith and Perriman aren't 100%, I guess would be the number one and like the deep threat, like Torrey Smith role that used to happen.
Yikes.
But Kamar Aiken might command a lot more targets as the possession guy.
Let's just get down to brass tacks.
All right, let's do it.
Could Kamar Aiken potentially be a candidate for the march to 1,100.
Whoa!
Oh, no.
Could he be a candidate? I'm not asking you to pick him, but I mean, like, I know there's got to be a short list forming. I mean,
it
could
is.
He be on the short list?
Be the boldest of your march to 1,100.
No, he's on the short list. I actually like him. I actually like the talent level. I don't mind him at all. I think the offense scares me a little bit. I really like their running game, and they got a couple good tight ends, as Alex Gellhart knows as well. I don't know, man. I'm not as excited about Kamar as I am about Marvin Jones, which is probably, well, I mean, A, I watched, you know, he's from Cal and been following his career since college, so it's more fun to root for that guy. And also, they're going to be throwing the ball, I think, a hell of a lot more in D-Town. So, I almost want to say concrete, M. Jones is my guy for the March 1100.
So we're closing in, huh?
You know, we're closing in.
Real really quick close. On the Baltimore offense before we jump away, too. As you mentioned, you have some concerns. Let's also not forget that it was Flacco that tore his ACL, too, in week 11.
Yeah.
So we have to watch his comeback as well and how he looks and how confident he is on that knee. I forget which knee it was, but whether it's his...
Who's the backup quarterback there?
Ryan Mallett, I think. Maybe Matt Schaub still.
Is Matt Schaub still on the...
I don't know. I don't know who's still there. Let me
Jimmy find out. Let's do a quick look.
Jimmy Clausen did
Josh Johnson, Ryan Mallett.
Yeah, so it's Mallett still.
And I told you, Josh Johnson somewhere. Josh Johnson is somewhere. That dude is just everywhere. He's on every team.
Hey,
I think he's the third string quarterback for 7 teams concurrently.
Well, here's the thing. I mean... Look, he's the first Jim Harbaugh quarterback, right? I mean, he was a University of San Diego guy when Harbaugh was there. So
good point.
Maybe that Harbaugh coaching is keeping him in the league.
There's a great piece on him traveling around and trying to find carving out a career for himself. But it's great. It's a good read. You should try to find it. Good stuff. But Joe Flacco, obviously not draftable. Breshad Perriman, not draftable. Steve Smith Sr., I will ask you this. Is he draftable?
Maybe late. I'm not going to be pulling the trigger on him. I know some people are. I was just in an industry actual draft already last week, and somebody took Steve Smith in one of the later rounds. It was a PPR format.
Okay.
There were 12 guys in it. But
12-team, PPR, 12 where's team. He go? 12? Did he go he was, round 12 later?
Like, yeah, it was like round 12 or later, I think.
Okay. All right, there you go. How about Crocker Gilmore? Max Williams?
No, it's Benjamin Watson there now, I think. That's a tough position group to figure out, too, because Watson
sure
played
is.
Really well last year. Gilmore showed some flashes. Williams is in his second year now, so it's not the rookie tight end thing. Just big old shrug emoji in the Ravens tight end.
I was saying before we started recording, they got Darren Waller, who's a former wide receiver. He's making the move to tight end this year.
James knows Darren Waller.
I do. North of the Waller. Absolutely. Wow, really? He's moving to tight end?
Yeah, that's what I read yesterday doing some research.
He's an athletic freak.
Backup guys.
He's an athletic freak.
Huge, too.
Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting. I got to do a little bit more research into that. I like Darren Waller. All right, there you go. How about in Kansas City? Jamaal Charles says he could return this week. What does it mean for his draft stats? I think we're kind of seeing him go late second, early third already. Does it boost his draft stock at all? Franchise?
I think so. I personally like Charles as like an end of the first round, like maybe in a 12-team league, like a late first rounder. I know.
So like anywhere between 12 and 15.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of the only guys in that top tier of running backs where we know what his role is.
Okay.
We know he can produce at an elite level. He's had 4 top 10 finishes in fantasy since 2009.
He's got 2 ACL tears in 5
years. Yeah, and he's getting older, but we know his role. We know what his ceiling is.
I would disagree. Do we know what his role is?
Some of these guys.
Absolutely.
Like, some of these guys. Like,
I mean, do we, though?
We do.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, because, like, look at it. In his first 2 years with Andy Reid, he amassed 2,300 rushing yards, 21 rushing touchdowns, almost 1,000 receiving yards, and 10 receiving touchdowns.
Listen, I love Jamaal Charles.
Me too.
But going into this year, I don't know if we go into this year looking at previous years and saying, well, hey, look, the workload's going to be there. It's kind of like the whole Le'Veon Bell thing, right? Like, it'd be crazy to assume that they're just going to say, hey, Lev, just shoulder this load. We know you have had serious injuries back-to-back years, but it's all good. Hey, we're just going to give you this crazy load again. But I don't know if Jamaal Charles gets that same workload again.
Well, his career average rush attempt per game is 13.2. So with that average rush attempts per game, he's been able to get it done at an elite level for years.
With those and like the 4 or 5 receptions a game or whatever, he'll end up scooping up.
Yeah,
like,
off 20 touches, this dude's just elite.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
He's very, very good. He doesn't need that huge workload.
That is amazing.
To get it done. So I like Charles maybe more than you guys do, but
oh, I know you do.
That's for sure.
I got him the lowest ranked of the 6 analysts who have put rankings up on NFL.com.
Probably.
I've got him somewhere. I think I've got him 20. I think I've got him 20 overall, which will push him into the third round. In standard formats, but that's okay.
Yeah, when it comes down to drafting him, it's whether or not you believe he's going to achieve that upside that we know we've seen and get all his touches again, like Franchise is saying, or you wait a little bit and, you know, cover your back and assuming that maybe, because they signed both Charcandrick West and Spencer Ware to small, very modest contract extensions, but they mix those guys in to keep Charles a little more fresh.
That's what I would think. How about in Detroit? The Lions OC says he wants Theo Riddick more involved in the run game. If this doesn't scream out running back by committee, I don't know what does.
Oh, it's totally going to be a committee.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think both of these guys can be fairly productive. I like Riddick a lot, especially in PPR situations this year.
100%.
I mean, I think one of the things that you look back on when the old JBC took over as the offensive coordinator, Jim Bob Cooter, they threw the ball a lot, and they were very efficient. They also threw a lot of shorter passes with Matt Stafford.
Right.
So I would expect you're going to see a lot more of that this year. I think you're going to see a lot of intermediate throws to guys like Golden Tate, Eric Ebron, but I think you see a lot of underneath throws, and I think Theo Riddick steps in there. Now, him being involved in the run game, I don't know that I'm drafting him on my fantasy roster expecting a lot of rushing production.
Okay.
If he gets some, that's great, but I think he's still going to be more of a pass-catching back in that offense.
He's not the greatest just between the tackles runner. He worked best in space where he could beat linebackers, but
absolutely.
The trouble was what they identified, and in the article that I think Kevin Patrick wrote for NFL at around the NFL, is that anytime Theo Riddick came on the field, it just screamed, pass.
That's true.
So the defense knew what was going on.
Dead giveaway.
So this could be a good thing for the backfield if it disguises it more and helps put both Theo Riddick and Ameer Abdullah into more favorable matchups.
Right.
Whether or not that holds true and Theo Riddick can actually put it together as a between the tackles runner or however they use him remains to be seen.
This is what I think. I think Ameer Abdullah and his labrum surgery is taking a little bit longer than probably either party expected. Having gone through a labrum myself, I'll tell you, look, I know I'm not getting into the training room 5 days a week. I know that, right? But I'm just saying the timetable for it is anywhere between 6 to 12 months. It's a tricky, tricky surgery. I think maybe that maybe the labrum is taking a lot longer and maybe having more of an impact on a guy that had ball security issues last year anyways.
Yeah.
Mixing in Theo Riddick into actual runs does make a heck of a lot of sense. But as you mentioned, man, he's really good in short space pass routes, man. He is really good. We saw some advanced tape on him last year. I mean, just torturing linebackers.
You wanted to see somebody put linebackers on skates?
Just like, torturing them out there.
It looked like, you know, that scene in a like a cartoon or a children's movie where somebody like rolls a bunch of marbles out and the bad guys like slip and slide on them. That was Theo Riddick when he would be matched up one-on-one with a linebacker.
I like him a lot this year. How many receptions did he have? He had
I think he had 80 or 81 last
80.
Year.
80?
Yeah.
99 targets.
That is, oh my God. But that's craziness.
Yeah, it was. But his career rushing yards per carry is 2.9.
That's also crazy.
That's where he needs to improve.
And we can't forget about Zach Zenner, who's just kind of lurking around there.
He is.
What's he coming back from?
He had cracked ribs and a partially punctured lung last year that put him on IR.
Oh, that's no bueno.
No bueno.
But you know, it's not a lower body injury.
No.
So that's good.
And he's a physical beast, and he could be their new short yardage and goal linebacker. I'm going to be really interested to watch this backfield a little bit during the preseason and stuff and see kind of how they divvy up touches, how Amir looks coming back from the shoulder injury.
You're saying Theo Riddick's going to be in the passing down work. You're saying Zach Zenner's going to be in for goal line looks.
Could.
The vulture.
Why am I drafting Amir Abdullah again?
Because he's good.
Oh, man. That does not look like a great situation for Amir Abdullah from a fantasy perspective. All right, let's go to Oakland. Amari Cooper, Derek Carr, says Amari Cooper could be more open this year.
He's already getting more open this year is what he's saying.
Okay.
Like practice and stuff.
What does that mean?
With nobody defending.
Yes, what does that mean? I don't know. How could you be more open in shorts?
It's a good trope. when guys are on him, I think it's just that he knows more now what the article was saying with the quotes from Carr and Michael Crabtree is that he understands like the space on the field better and how to use it because he was a very natural route runner coming out of college, probably the most polished last year.
Yeah.
And we saw that a lot of times.
We saw flashes.
As in a pro, yeah.
Yeah, we saw flashes.
But they both just are making the comment that now that he has that full year in and he's, you know, played through 16 NFL games, he just understands everything better and how to use his routes and the space on the field and the defense to get more open.
Can I play devil's advocate for a second? Because I think just about everyone in America believes Amari Cooper is going to have a breakout season this year. Are we a little, because of that sentiment, are we too bullish on him in rankings and in drafts? Because where is he going right now? Where do we got him? Who's got the rankings?
I think he's floating around in the like wide receiver, anywhere from wide receiver 12 to 20 in our rankings.
Okay, so locked and loaded. High-end wide receiver 2 with, and I think just about, again, I can't find a person who is saying that Amari Cooper is being overdrafted. So I think the perception is that he's got serious, serious wide receiver 1 upside.
Yeah.
Of course he does.
And he's right now locked and loaded as a safe floor as a wide receiver 2. So again, just playing devil's advocate, is he being slightly overdrafted?
No.
Okay.
I think he might be. Like his ADP on Fantasy Football Calculator right now he's the 11th wide receiver off the board.
10th, but what round
10th,
is
10th pick of the second round in 12 team drafts?
So late second, third. Let's just say third-ish round.
Like Keenan Allen, Brandon Marshall, Demaryius Thomas, Kelvin Benjamin are all behind him.
Ooh, see, that's interesting.
Right.
That's interesting. We got some established dudes in there.
Yeah, right, but I mean,
exactly.
You are drafting certainly on upside, and the fact that the guy had 1,000 yards in his rookie season.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, even forgetting what Odell Beckham and that class did in their rookie season.
That's good.
I mean, Cooper had a really good rookie year.
He did.
And I think everybody looks at that Raider offense, the Raider team as a whole, but especially the offense, and sees a group that's getting better. I mean, everybody saw, I think, flashes from Derek Carr, and you saw a little bit from Amari Cooper, and you know Michael Crabtree is going to be consistent. And even, you know, I know Latavius Murray isn't necessarily a fantasy darling, but I think people believe that he's good enough to give enough balance to that offense. But I just think the way that offense is shaping up again, I do think Amari Cooper has wide receiver one upside, and I think he's going to be one of those guys you get fairly early. I mean, he's going to be a second round guy.
Will you pay? Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Would you pay a late second round price?
Late second? Absolutely.
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 Gosh, see, I start hesitating there.
Absolutely.
I start hesitating late second. Gilhar? Yeah.
And, well, I was just looking to at myfantasyleague.com's ADP, which is a bunch of sharps and degenerates right now are doing those because you can do them all year.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I say that and we all have
I have five or six of those. Leagues,
I was just saying to Harmon last night, I need to get into another one. But he's going with pick, these are 12-team leagues, and he's going with pick 21. So back end of that second round. He's going right after the likes of Mike Evans, Keenan Allen, Jordy Nelson, Alshon Jeffrey among wide receivers, right before Brandon Cooks, Brandon Marshall, Demaryius Thomas, and T.Y. Hilton.
See, I'm okay with that.
I think that's a fine
that's
a fine spot because the upside is there. And
yeah.
I think we saw what probably his NFL floor might be last year, which is like the 1,000 yards and 7 touchdown.
I agree with that. I actually think he's got higher upside than Keenan Allen this year. I do.
Wow.
I think we're talking about a way more touchdown potential.
Yeah.
And I think the yardage could be similar too. I really do.
He had a foot injury late last year that kind of held him back for a few games.
True.
So, like, if he didn't have that, I mean,
where would he have gone?
Yeah, he could have put up more yards. And you guys talked about in the last episode, talking about Derek Carr being possibly a top 10 maybe fantasy quarterback.
I think he's a fringe top 10 guy this year.
Yeah, and if he's going to improve, Cooper's got to – it kind of goes hand in hand with Cooper, right?
And I think what people like too, right, about Cooper's situation is that you look at the offense and there's – It's a very clear-cut tree, right? It's like Cooper and Crabtree and not a whole lot else in terms of the passing down work, right? So, like, I think in terms of clarity, I think people feel pretty good about the floor. All right. CJ Spiller in New Orleans says he, quote, knows he can flourish in the Saints offense. Bruh.
Well, hey, look, I will say this.
Bruh.
He has the skill set really to flourish in the Saints offense. Now, whether or not that I know how you feel about CJ Spiller.
Bruh.
I know how you feel. But he does have the skill set really to flourish in that offense. I mean, he's got the skills to I'm going back and looking at, you know,
we should just re-rack what the exact same things I said in 2015. And we could just re-rack that right now.
I mean, I'm going back. Like, he has the potential. I won't say to put up because the 2012 season was his breakout. He had, you know, what, 1,700 scrimmage yards.
Doesn't count as a breakout if you've never had a good year following.
But the next year he put up 1,100 scrimmage yards. He only had 2 touchdowns. But I think he has the ability to be another, you know, 1,000-yard from scrimmage guy and maybe put up 4 or 5 touchdowns. Now, I don't know if you consider that flourishing, but it's certainly better than what he would have given you last year. Way better. Light years better than what he
this
gave
is,
you last
let's
year.
Not forget that in the football community and among football cognoscenti, when CJ Spiller signed in New Orleans, everybody was like clapping, like, bravo,
this is it.
Perfect fit.
I was not.
And then he got injured, and that completely fell. And in the article, too, he talks about how his knee injury was what was slowing him down all last year and why they eventually shut him down. So I'm just – I don't know what his role would be if he is fully healthy. Because, like, Mark Ingram took another step as a pass catcher last year.
Exactly.
But
he went insane last year from the passing game.
Maybe they don't, you know, use Mark Ingram like that as much to keep him healthy. And they try to get Spiller in, like, ugh. Spiller, why do you do this?
Look, what was his overall stats last year? Can somebody look this up? Because here's the thing, man.
Yes.
And also, take away, remember that overtime?
He had the one big play
one
in
big
overtime.
Play. Right. So take that out.
Okay, that was against the Cowboys, I believe.
I think it was against the Cowboys.
Okay, so his overall numbers.
Yes.
112 rushing yards on 36 carries.
On 36 carries.
34 catches.
Okay.
239 receiving yards.
And you could probably take like 70 of them away.
And a grand total of 2 touchdowns.
Right. Okay. All right.
Look, I would be willing to take a very late.
No, you would not.
I would.
Stop. I would. Stop it, Marcus Gregg. No, you would not. No, you would not. Like what? What are you saying? Like 15th round? No, you're not. You're not taking
it out right before I take my kicker and or defense. Like I would. I'm not saying I would guarantee you that I would do it, but I would look at it. I would look at it and say, "There's the potential."
Oh man. Is anyone more bullish? Gelhar, you're going to drop a – you're going to waste a 14th, 15th round pick on CJ Spiller?
Waste.
When you could get a kicker then?
I would rather have a second defense.
Wow, that's a slap.
Wow,
I mean,
second
CJ Spiller.
Defense.
Maybe. I want to actually see him do something, like in training camp You know, see some sort of vine come out where they're like, oh, wow, look at CJ Spiller. And I'm like, okay, he's back.
Oh,
the
boy.
Other side of it is, has Ingram ever had a fully healthy season?
No, he's never.
So, like,
no, but he's not the between the tackles guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, even if that's what I'm saying. Like, the upside for me is just not even there because I'm saying, look, if Ingram goes down, I don't even think C.J. Spiller becomes the starter.
No, it's Tim Hightower.
It's Tim Hightower all the way. I mean, first of all, they got like 17 running backs on the roster.
I mean,
somebody's going to have
this
to.
This speaks to how much James Coe is down on C.J. Spiller, because knowing how much he dislikes Mark Ingram.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
And
true.
He still won't give Spiller
that's right.
any run.
True. That's right.
That says a lot.
That's right. I think he's going to be involved in the passing game. It'd be crazy not to at least utilize him. I think.
Yeah.
I really honestly believe Daniel Lasko, being the athletic freak he is and having the skill set that he does, will also be utilized on passing down work, which would kill C.J. Spiller's value. But having both of those guys together, I think also semi-limits Mark Ingram. And that's a point that I kind of sort of made in my fantasy disappointments list, talking about Mark Ingram, who I think Mike Fabian has 13 overall. And I'm like, there's no chance in hell I would pay a early second round price to go get Mark Ingram, a guy who's has he ever played a complete season?
No, I believe we've established this in the podcast numerous times when you yell at Mark Ingram.
By the way, just a quick piece of breaking news here.
Please,
this
hit me.
David Hellman from the staff writer for DallasCowboys.com says Darren McFadden had surgery on the injury he suffered to his elbow 2 weeks ago. Garrett expects him to be out for, quote, a couple months.
Whoa.
Oh,
so there you go.
Whoa.
Lock it in for Zeke Elliott.
Hello.
Yup.
Hello, Zeke.
Apparently, he broke his elbow over Memorial Day weekend.
Doing what?
Who knows? Don't know.
Probably
doing Darren McFadden?
Probably grilling. Like, I don't know. At the rate Darren McFadden used to get injured.
Heavy lifting there on the grill.
Really?
All right.
That's very interesting.
All right. Good news. Good stuff. I shouldn't say good, but, you know, it's good stuff for Marcus to break that on the podcast. I like it. All right. Remember, NFL.com/draftkit to get all your draft kit pieces. NFL.com/fantasy if you want to do some mock drafts right now. Sign up your league. Sign up your team. Do all that kind of stuff. All right. Let's talk about deep sleepers, a topic that is near and dear to my heart.
Well, since this is near and dear to your heart, who on this list do you want me to talk about?
Well,
can I say this?
We need to graduate Kamar Aiken now.
So he's no longer a deep sleeper?
Right.
Oh, he's still there.
I agree.
Is he just a sleeper?
Yeah, he's just a sleeper now. He's got to graduate to sleeper status.
No.
No?
Not Kamar.
Yeah, I think so.
You're recording this, right?
Yes.
I do want to say this. I feel like we've given DeAndre Washington a lot of burn on this show. But Alex Gelhar, give it to me again. DeAndre Washington, Texas Tech running back, little guy, 5'8". I don't know, like 200 pounds, 205 pounds, drafted by Oakland in the later rounds. Tell me why you believe he is a nice deep sleeper.
Well, they need help in the passing game out of the backfield. They threw a ton of targets at Latavius Murray and their fullbacks last year, and none of them were effective at all with those targets. DeAndre Washington is a shifty guy. He's smaller. He's got some speed. And they like what he offers between the tackles too. So I think he'll at least mix in as that pass catching complement.
Okay.
And maybe he turns into a Theo Riddick type, where in PPR leagues he has some value. Or, you know, if the running backs start falling apart like they did last year, and you need a flex guy, you can grab him in a game that might have a pass heavy game script or be a shootout for the Ravens.
Okay.
And he's also a good handcuff. Like Latavius Murray got a ton of work last year.
Oh my gosh.
72% of like all their carries and targets.
A ridiculous amount.
And despite all that, like he finishes the RB10, but you look at his numbers across the board and you're like, man, he got all that work and that's all he produced on. So
right.
there's a chance that somebody like Washington comes in and gets a number of opportunities in this offense and could do something with them.
When you guys watched Oakland games, didn't you always just get the feeling that Latavius Murray was pacing himself?
Yeah, kind of. And when I would watch them and looking back on them, I'm like, how did he get to 1,000 yards?
it's interesting, especially for a big athletic freak like Latavius Murray. He just never broke one off like we saw him do in the previous season. I just watched him, and I just kind of felt like he was, again, just kind of sort of pacing himself. I don't know. Maybe it was the coaching staff saying, hey, man, slow your game down a little bit. Or maybe it was just he himself saying, hey, look, I got to shoulder 30 carries a game or whatever it might be. I'm going to have 30 touches this game. I got to save myself.
He had 307 touches last year.
Wow.
I mean, that's an insane workload for a young guy like that. DeAndre, you know, he's an interesting play, at least, as a good handcuff, PPR play. Deep sleep. I love it. I love him as a deep sleeper. Love him as a deep
Beautiful.
Sleeper. Zach Zenner.
Zach Zenner. We mentioned him a little bit.
The second time he's been mentioned on that.
I know. Yes. We'll just love it.
Like to double down on what we were talking about before is, and these are deep sleepers. Like I didn't want to go with just like guys that everybody knows or that have been getting a lot of hype. So I was trying to uncover some guys who you could scoop up at the very, very end of your draft that could have some potential. And like we said, with Amir Abdullah coming back from offseason shoulder surgery, we don't know yet how he's going to return, but we've seen in the past some running backs are a little more hesitant or kind of struggle. They don't trust it right away because that shoulder's, you know what, they absorb a lot of contact on.
Right.
And after it just got fixed, they might not be in for it. Zenner's a bigger guy. He racked up a ton of yards in college with South Dakota State, over 2,000 yards in 3 straight years on the ground he piled up.
Whoa.
So he's an athletic guy. Draft Twitter and Metrics Twitter loved him when he came out last year as a UDFA. So he could be that guy. Like they ran the committee, you know, pretty kind of effectively last year. But Zenner would be an upgrade over what Joik Bell did last year. He'd be a faster, stronger, more athletic version. And like I said, this kind of hinges on Amir's injury. But Zenner could be getting into the mix more and more as the bigger power back there.
Okay. And of course, you know, I'm going to ask you about your boy, Double J. Jeff Janis.
I was surprised we didn't start there. I think that's where we just start.
Yeah, I threw him in again. What the hell? Like,
what the hell?
I mean, everybody saw what he could be capable of in that NFC divisional round. He's got size. He's got speed. He mossed Patrick Peterson in the end zone on a game-tying Hail Mary.
Yeah, that was impressive.
He's still raw. He still needs to get better at running routes. And Aaron Rodgers hasn't, added any fuel to the hype train this offseason, because all the beat reporters love asking about Jeff Janis, and Rodgers is like, yeah, he's got a lot of work to do. But if, you know, Ty Montgomery's still coming off an injury, Devontae Adams was bad last year.
Oh.
Yeah, if Jeff Janis starts getting mixed in, he could be a great target in best ball leagues like MFL 10s, where
you
don't need him to produce week after week after week, but when he does potentially have a 140-yard, 2-touchdown explosion game,
right?
Boom, you got him.
There you go. Marcus Grant, anyone on this list you like?
I'm kind of keeping an eye on Jerick McKinnon because I liked what I saw from him last year. And one of the things I noticed last year with the Vikings is that they used him as a third down back. And we all know who's ahead of him in line there in the Vikings backfield. And, speaking of, franchise at the beginning saying he was in the best shape of his life, I've seen that story about Adrian Peterson now too. But
does AP ever get out of shape?
I don't think so. I
don't think so.
I'm pretty sure he came out of the womb just jacked.
Right. I mean, you know, maybe he has a week in the off season where he doesn't work out and eats a hamburger or something. Like, I don't know.
Like a big family barbecue or something.
Right. Oh, man.
Ham this weekend.
See, the thing is with AP, I could see that dude eating like crap just all day,
just
every day.
Works so hard.
But he just is a freak.
Yeah. But, What
I want to throw in about McKinnon here is I think he's one of a few handcuff backs, and I was talking about this on Twitter a little bit with Sigmund Bloom and a couple other people, that have like league-winning upside as handcuffs if things go poorly to the guy ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jerick McKinnon, Carlos Williams, and I might even throw James Starks into that mix if like Eddie Lacy were to go down or struggle again. Guys in good offenses that would be able to get up a sizable workload and are talented players in their own right, like that's a good situation. So McKinnon's a guy that I'll probably be scooping up a lot. And as I noted in the piece, which again you can read at NFL.com/draftkit, Peterson kind of wore down over the year because he got such a heavy workload and that offense relied on him so much.
Sure.
In the first nine games, he averaged just shy of 5 yards a carry. But over the last eight, including the playoffs, he averaged just 3.67 yards per carry.
Wow.
So if they sprinkle in McKinnon a little bit more, Peterson's going to be 31. Like, you know, even if they just give McKinnon a series here or there or do more passing down work, he could be like a Giovanni Bernard type role, you know, when he was a rookie and get a decent amount of total yards and a few touchdowns.
You know what I really like about it, too, is the fact that this is what now his third year in the NFL.
Yeah.
He's a converted quarterback out of Southern, I believe. His measurables are through the roof.
He is a spark god, which is that athletic metric that Nike uses. He had an insane score on it.
He is an athletic monster. And I really, truly, honestly believe going into his third season now, maybe it's his fourth season, but I think it's his third.
Pretty sure it's third.
He's learning the game. He's learning the position. And he's learning behind one of the best running backs of all time.
Right.
As you mentioned, Gilhar, this guy could be an absolute game changer should AP sit out a game or two or whatever it might be. I know. The folks out there who play casually are going to say, well, what about that Matt Asiata guy?
No.
And again, I get it. Look, when AP didn't play, Matt Asiata stepped in, and he had himself a couple of splash games. I get it.
McKinnon was the much better player
right.
in that span, though. But Asiata just had the stupid couple
touchdown
games.
Yep.
He had two different three-touchdown games.
McKinnon would look great, move them all the way down there, and
yep.
be like, all right, kid, get out. Asiata, go fall into the end zone.
I also found on Vikings.com, Peterson was talking about working on his route running abilities this offseason. He wants to get better at that because I think he struggled with that last year.
He's definitely not used to it.
Right, and he was talking up McKinnon and said, we have this young guy, he's a pro athlete, and he does a great job when it comes to providing that scat back for us. So, you know, Peterson's working on...
he might be the biggest, strongest scat back in the history of the world. I mean,
right.
He's huge,
I mean,
Jerick McKinnon.
Peterson's working on his receiving game, but I think he recognizes the skill that McKinnon has.
It kind of leads into an Adrian Peterson discussion, right? Because where's AP going right now? Somewhere in the top five. A lot of folks feel very confident about AP. You know, you kind of look at the age and the workload. I think there are a lot of folks who are a little bit hesitant about AP.
For sure.
And yet there are those people who are like, you know what, forget it, man. The guy's an absolute Terminator. He's a cyborg. I'm investing. I don't care.
Yeah.
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 I mean, I get that logic. Obviously, the dude blew out his knee, came back, and then
set records,
whatever. Basically.
Yeah.
So I totally understand that, but there is something that's just nagging with me when I look at him, just saying like, you know, I quote Outkast all the time. Even the sun goes down, heroes eventually die. I mean, at some point, even Arnold Schwarzenegger in T2 got dipped in a vat of lava, and
that's
that was
right.
kind of a wrap. So I would certainly still spend a first round pick on Adrian Peterson,
but
I would make sure that I come around and get McKinnon as a handcuff.
There you go.
The other thing I think people were worried about is Minnesota's production on offense. Like
I think they'll be better this year. No.
I mean, they might be, but last year they were not great.
Their passing offense didn't have a ton of volume.
But
Teddy Bridgewater now is going to be in his third year. He finally is a number one wide receiver in Laquon Treadwell. It could swing up.
Right.
All right.
Can I give a little shout out to Tyrod before we move on here? Ty God Taylor, a favorite of the Stronghold. We all loved him last year, and he was a great pick playing DFS a lot because he came at such a value.
Yeah.
However, I think people are discounting how well he actually played last year, especially from a fantasy standpoint. So from weeks 1 through 4, he was the fourth highest scoring quarterback in the entire league in fantasy. And then he got injured. And then when he came back in week 9 to 17, he was the ninth highest scoring quarterback in all of fantasy. So you look at that with that small gap removed, even if he played mediocrely, he would have finished as probably around a QB1 based on those scores.
Oh, no doubt.
His legs and his rushing ability gives him a safe week-to-week floor because I think he had 9 games with over 40 rushing yards. And with Sammy Watkins, I mean, hopefully he comes back healthy, taking another step. When those two were on fire down the stretch last year, Tyrod could be a guy that you could honestly draft in one of your last rounds and probably get quarterback one production out of him.
Yeah,
I agree. I absolutely agree. I think Tyrod Taylor and Eli Manning are those two guys that I'm really looking at in those double-digit rounds and saying, okay, look, give me one of those guys. Or give me both of those guys, as a matter of fact. I'll take both of them. All right, let's talk about red zone analysis. What does it mean? What did you find out, Alex Gilhorn?
Well, what I wanted to do was just take a look at what people had done in the red zone recently, if there was any sort of correlation to teams being more efficient in the red zone, converting more of their plays into touchdowns and having a higher scoring, which, I mean, there was. It wasn't like a complete, you know, perfect linear correlation, but teams that were more efficient in the red zone did score. But what was interesting was just kind of looking at the divvying up of the touches and which teams were more effective. So one trend that was not surprising to anybody also was that a good quarterback helped his team be a lot more efficient in the red zone. Like the Cardinals, what was crazy was you looked at them in 2014 when Carson Palmer was out.
Yeah.
They only converted 14% of their red zone plays into touchdowns. That number jumped to over 24% last year. Larry Fitzgerald led the way. He had a lot of targets, but John Brown was the second most targeted guy in the red zone, which was kind of surprising. Yeah.
Interesting.
Over Michael Floyd. Floyd was more the deep threat for them last year than John Brown.
Okay.
But I like both of those guys this year over Larry Fitzgerald. I think a lot of his early season production was predicated on some of those red zone looks, and I think the other two could start stealing some of those. Some teams were super easy to figure out. This article right now is on NFL.com/fantasy. You guys can check it out. And I just did NFC yesterday. AFC will be out today, Tuesday.
Okay.
And then you guys can take a look. But so, you know, like Atlanta, surprising no one, basically all of their red zone touches went to Julio Jones and Devonta Freeman.
Right.
So that was a pretty easy situation to figure out.
What was surprising for you?
That Detroit actually had the highest touchdown percentage in the red zone among all NFL teams last year.
Is that right?
And that once Jim Bob Cooter took over from week 8 to 17, they converted a ridiculous 44% of their red zone plays into touchdowns.
Whoa. That's insane.
Yes. Yeah. So that was quite surprising. And now the question is, remaining that efficient is probably never going to happen.
No.
The league average over the last 4 years was about 20.5% or so.
Okay.
But they don't have Megatron anymore. So like, who's going to take up that role? Is Eric Ebron going to take a step? Is Marvin Jones going to be able to be that guy? I mean, Golden Tate is good in the red zone because of his short area quickness, but that'll be an interesting one to see.
Theo Riddick.
Yeah, Theo Riddick as well. the Rams were a surprisingly effective team, but I think that was just largely because Todd Gurley was there, and he got into the end zone.
Okay.
He got into the end zone on over a third of his red zone carries, so that helped them even it out. And one interesting team, too, we kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier when we were talking about the Vikings, is the presence of Laquon Treadwell there now, because Kyle Rudolph was their lead red zone threat last year, and he only...
That's not good.
He had 10 targets there, and he only turned 3 of them into
Marcus has an awesome nickname for him.
Yeah, I think that nickname's going out the window, though. The red zone reindeer.
Rudolph the red zone reindeer.
It just, I don't think it applies quite as much anymore.
Might be the greatest nickname in the history of sports.
Rudolph the red zone reindeer.
Might be.
Wow.
That's
high praise.
It might be. But yeah, no, I mean, look, I'm not a big North Turner guy.
You've made that clear.
Yes.
On this podcast.
It makes no sense. We're still talking about the Dallas Cowboys from the 90s. Makes no sense. The game has changed. Let's move on. North Turner's not a good OC. But again, you know, you think about just the development of Teddy Bridgewater, Laquon Treadwell, Diggs, AP is there. We talked about Jerick McKinnon. I don't know. To me, doesn't it seem like they got the pieces on offense to move that ball?
Yes, I think they do. They're not going to be a prolific offense, but I think there will be some fantasy points to be had, and their offense could take a little bit of a step from last year.
From a fantasy perspective, give me a player that in your red zone analysis that you said, you know what, man, now all of a sudden I'm thinking about who?
Well, I like Mike. It made me feel even a little better about somebody like Mike Evans, too. Last year he had 14 targets. He only turned 2 of them into touchdowns, which is not great. But that year feels like an anomaly for him. He converted about half his red zone looks into touchdowns the year before.
I think that sounds about right.
And he and Winston spent time this offseason working on the rapport. You know, rookie quarterback. Evans kind of was injured to start the year, had some things. So he's a guy that's going to command a lot of looks. Like Vincent Jackson, I think, had 13 in the red zone last year as well, and also only converted like two or three of them into touchdowns. So more of those could go Mike Evans' way as he and Winston build up their young quarterback wide receiver rapport.
I don't mind it, man. I feel like Mike Evans is kind of the forgotten good wide receiver.
Yes. Oh, and Jordan Reed, probably surprising nobody, just got absolutely pummeled by Kirk Cousins in the red zone, and they were super effective together. Kirk Cousins threw 21 passes to Jordan Reed in the red zone, and he turned 10 of them into touchdowns.
Over, under, Jordan Reed, 10 and a half games.
Over.
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 You guys are so confident. But,
you guys are so confident.
But yeah, it was interesting to note, too, like, and this showed up with the Redskins when they got more stable play from Kirk Cousins and the Jaguars, which we'll see in today's piece with Blake Bortles, is that their touchdown percentage jumped a bunch, which helped helped their overall scoring output, too. So it's just worth noting when you're looking, and like I said in the lead to this article, this is just a small piece of the puzzle. Obviously, it shouldn't be the end-all, be-all, like, oh, well, Jordan Reed got 21 targets in the red zone.
So
like,
thereby.
Tight end number one. But it's just when you're looking at guys, you're trying to figure out, like, hey, what might their scoring potential be?
Sure.
There's a snapshot. I took the number of plays, passing and rushing over the last 4 years.
But it's like you said. I mean, who would have thought? Detroit.
Detroit, exactly.
Right. That's the first thing I said, too.
Supremely efficient in the red zone.
Yeah, so that's great. All right, let's do Daily Depths. Get out of here.
Let's do it.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the Daily Depths and Hooks. Give me depths, because I'll be scribbling around. Give me dabbing up depths about depths.
Daily Depth time. I'm Marcus Grant. What you got?
I'm going to dab. Well, first off, I feel like I should almost anti-dab you, James Coe.
Why is that?
Because, you know, a couple weeks ago,
I
came on this show, and you handed an NBA title to the Golden State Warriors, and I tried to pump the brakes. I tried to be rational about it.
Listen, dude, Warriors in seven, calm down, it's fine.
I originally predicted them in six, so I'm not in panic mode here. But,
I think they're going to drop that game in game six just so they can celebrate in front of their home fans.
Yeah, I don't really want that.
No?
I don't need that kind of stress. But, you know, like, I feel like you have something to do with why we are
That's
here right now. So you're
me? Well, I wasn't the guy that went full Draymond Green on LeBron's private parts.
But it was your vibe, I think, that made this happen. So that's an anti-dap. But my real daily dap goes out to Robert Rodriguez and the El Rey Network. It's a TV network he started a few years ago. Obviously, he's the guy who, movie director, started his career with El Mariachi, From Dusk Till Dawn, Desperado.
Spy Kids.
Yeah, can't forget
Spy
that.
Spy Kids.
The Spy Kids trilogy, I think it is.
I don't even know. They made a lot of those. Very successful.
Very successful. But he's also started a TV network, the El Rey Network, which I think some people have on cable. I actually have Sling TV, and I have it.
You got hipster TV.
I do have hipster TV. But I love it because it's all the cheesy TV shows and movies that I love. I mean, they'll have whole days dedicated to Kung Fu. It's been a lot of Bruce Lee this month. I think they're doing for 4th of July.
How are you watching basketball? Are you going to the bars or something?
Well, I mean, ABC is available freely.
On Sling TV?
Over the air.
Oh.
On James, the main networks.
Over the air.
I'm not copying. What is this over the air thing?
You get the old rabbit ears, man. Watch the big three.
But, so a lot of Bruce Lee this month. I think the 4th of July, they're doing a Godzilla marathon. But then they also have, like, old TV shows like Knight Rider and Miami Vice and Airwolf. I haven't seen Airwolf.
Oh, my gosh.
Years.
Airwolf. Dun, 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 dun.
Exactly. The helicopter with the great theme song.
Wow.
But yeah, I've kind of fallen in love with El Rey Network. So like, if I'm not watching anything sports related, chances are that's kind of what I'm watching right now. So,
you're such an old man.
I am. Right.
You're watching reruns of Airwolf?
Hey man, that's great. Especially when you're sitting there.
That's ultimate hipster television.
Right, when you're
watching
on
cable and watching hipster shows.
Right, I'm sitting there folding laundry.
Oh my god.
Watching Airwolf. Yeah, man.
Jan
Michael Vincent. Kicking ass.
You know, it's funny. Like, I've been to a couple hipster parties, and, like, that's what it is. It's like, you know, you'll go, and people got copper mugs full of whatever. And playing in the background are, like, these old shows, like Airwolf. And you're like, and there's no sound because, you know, they still have to play EDM music. But there's no sound. You're hearing the EDM, but you're like, is that? Wait, is that? That's Airwolf.
Yep.
That's what it's like at Marcus Grant's house.
Yep, pretty much. Minus the EDM.
Minus the EDM. Are there at least copper mugs?
You know what? I used to have copper mugs. Okay. I don't anymore.
You've graduated to mason jars? Is that what's
almost.
Called? Okay.
Almost.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Matt Harmon's not here, so I know that that was a little bit confusing there. That's okay. Franchise.
All right.
Hit me with the daily dap.
I got two today. My first one.
Yeah, buddy.
I grew up playing hockey, and I can't ignore that the Penguins won the Stanley Cup the other night.
That's right.
I'm not a Penguins fan. I'm just a hockey fan.
What?
I'm a Rangers fan. I'm from New York, but I am a hockey fan.
I'm confused because
NHL,
you're a Steelers guy.
Right. Correct.
So this is confusing because of Cordell Stewart.
Right.
Ah.
He loved Slash back in the day.
Right, right.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm giving daps to the Penguins for winning the Cup. I actually got to touch the Stanley Cup when I was like 10 years old when the Devils won in 95. So
it's pretty cool.
Picture
pretty
with sweet. Me and my dad.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So daps to the Penguins.
There you go.
My other daps is to the Red Hot Chili Peppers, who have a new album coming out at the end of this week.
Holy cow, do they really?
It's their first album since 2011. It's called The Getaway, and it's produced by Danger Mouse.
Which makes me really interested.
Who is an awesome producer.
Very intrigued.
He's done some amazing stuff. So
who's on the axe for him now? Because Frusciani's gone, right?
Yeah. It's the same guy that was on the last album. I'm just not sure of his name.
Okay.
He's like one of Frusciante's boys.
Got it.
Josh Klinghoffer.
Josh Klinghoffer. All right.
Yes.
Check that out.
Yes.
And so do you have a good story for us yet? Or do we have to wait until next week's pod?
You're going to have to wait. Okay. I'll give you a story.
Please.
It's not really a story. It's just like something I discovered.
Will you stop?
So, listen, I started following Antonio Brown on Snapchat during the offseason.
Okay.
And he was in L.A. a lot because he was on Dancing with the Stars, as you guys may be aware.
Absolutely.
So he was always working out on the UCLA campus.
Don't tell me I tighter you. That was
No. And I'm like watching his Snapchats, watching him work out. I'm like, I got to go stalk this guy.
But okay.
He's a great follow on Snapchat, and I've discovered like following celebrities on Snapchat. I'm an old guy, you know. Snapchat's for the kids. Right? So this is something I discovered, and I'm getting more pumped. And my man crush is only growing larger
for AB.
Brown. Yeah,
that's interesting.
I love this guy.
I just got on Snapchat. I think 2 days ago. I just started my account, and it's mostly because, first of all, I'm the worst follow on Instagram. You can follow me if you want, James Deco. But I only post pictures of my kid. I don't think it helps anybody in the fantasy community. Although when the season starts, I'll post my DFS lineups and all that kind of good stuff. But I started my Snapchat because my kid I didn't realize they had all these goofy filters on there.
Yeah, yeah.
And my kid freaking loves it.
Yeah. Those are fun.
It's only like a week or two ago that I learned how to use some of those filters.
I still don't know how to use Snapchat, so I'm still kind of, you know, you could find me on there.
This
James
is the,
I've got
the old men don't know how to use Snapchat.
Like we said, it's an app for the kids.
Yeah, I don't even know how to use filters.
There's
on Snapchat,
a learning curve here, all right?
Bro, I don't even know how to post on Snapchat yet, so I'm still figuring that out. For some reason, I thought Snapchat was for sexting. I found out that's incorrect. That is incorrect.
I mean... You know, I'm sure some people probably do.
That's probably true. That's probably true.
But that is not what the majority of us use it for.
I will give a daily dap out to the UCI grads who graduated this past weekend. A friend of mine, my wife's cousin, graduated from business school there. UC Irvine. UC Irvine went to that graduation yesterday. It was
go Anteaters.
Go Anteaters. Zot, zot, zot. So there you go. I also give a daily dap out to my boy here, Franchito. The franchise, his beard has come back stronger than ever.
Yes.
Stronger than
best
ever.
Best shape of my life.
Oh, my God. His beard game is out of control.
Thank you. Matt Harmon's going to have to step it up when he returns.
Oh, man. Dude.
Thank you.
Are you working in the beard oil?
Yes.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Well, of course.
I am.
All right. There you go. Alex Gellhart, WizKid from Wisconsin. What's up?
All right. Got a couple daps as well. First one will be going to... Chris Wessling for throwing a banger of a barbecue
he
this
had,
weekend.
A nice little shindig.
Marcus and I were there. Lots of beers were drank. Lots of cornhole was played. Semi-anti-dap to Dan Hansis for he and I went 6-1 in cornhole, and then he formed a super team with Chris Wessling, and nobody else I could pull into my team was able to take them down with me. So we had a good run, but I felt semi-betrayed.
Yeah, here's the thing. I felt like you and I were actually playing okay, but then Wes went on one of his Steph Curry-like runs where he was dropping everything in the bucket, and there was no coming back from that.
So I tried with Marcus. I tried with Ali Bhanpuri. Nothing could take it down. But thanks to Wes for hosting a nice barbecue with some delicious ribs. And that's then Daily Daps 2. I've done this video game a few times before, but Dota 2 is one of the top esports games right now, and there was a major tournament this past weekend in Manila in the Philippines, and OG, the team, became the first team to win two of the major events in Dota 2, so Daily Daps to them. And it's kind of cool because in that esport, a lot of people are swap teams all the times, and there's lots of shuffling, but these guys have been together for over a year now, and they're kind of an upstart, and they've got some momentum heading into the big one this August, so it'll be kind of fun to watch and see how they do. So Daily Daps to them, and to Twitch and the production value on these esport things. I'm just kind of curious to watch it too.
It's growing.
Insane.
Yeah, it's getting really good.
It's incredible.
Yeah,
like
it's getting
the
really
stuff,
good.
The stuff they're doing now, even just from a broadcast technical viewing standpoint, is
they've got a long way to go, but they're growing leaps and bounds.
This last tournament was really cool. They took some big steps, but yeah, it's been fun to watch.
Who
so
puts on Dota 2?
Valve made the game. The same people that made Half-Life and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And it was a Warcraft spin-off kind of thing that some people made.
All right, cool.
But yeah, that should do it.
All right, there you go. That's our show. NFL.com/draftkit. Be sure to check it out. For the WizKid from Wisconsin, MG, my guy Marcus Grant, and the franchise, Matt Francis. Welcome back. I'm James Coe. We're out.